Hello and welcome to the New Zealand Initiative podcast. I'm Dr. Eric Crampton, chief economist with the initiative. And whenever New Zealand gets mentioned in a global index or some new ranking, we usually fire off the New Zealand relevance klaxon, the big alarm that New Zealand has showed up either well or poorly in a global index. And we tend to hope that it's going to be showing up well. Sometimes we only do well if it's on a per capita basis because we're small, but sometimes we do well in absolute measures as well. A couple of weeks ago, We Are Innovation released a new index of effective anti-smoking policies. So they ranked countries around the world on the effectiveness of their policies around nicotine and alternative ways of accessing it as compared to smoking. That index had New Zealand dropping from third place in the prior measure to 11th place. Still a good showing, but not quite where we might want to be. With me today, we've got Frederico Fernandez, who is the leader of We Are Innovation. They're a global network of think tanks and NGOs that look for tech-based innovative solutions to real policy problems. So often you'll hear, well, kind of prohibitionist approaches or government must really clamp down on something approaches to problems. That's not the only way of fixing things. Often liberalizing, reducing regulations around alternatives, that can be a much better way forward. I like that way forward, and that's part of the basis for this index, looking at more effective ways of combating the harms of smoking. So welcome, Frederico.
Hello, Eric. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be with you and with your audience.
And apologies for the time zone difference. You're over in Poland, so it's late in the evening for you. It's early in the morning for me. We're kind of splitting the difference.
Indeed. Well, you're talking to me from the future, so, you know, I always enjoy that.
Yeah, I'll have to give you the lottery numbers later. So tell us a bit about the initiation of this index, how you came to be working in this area.
Well, yeah, for that, I have to tell you a little bit about our organization. We Are Innovation, as you kindly described, it is a network of right now more than 40 think tanks, NGOs, and foundations that are spread across four different continents. And what unites us is, as the name clearly states, that we want to defend innovation, we want human creativity to thrive, and that we feel that innovation is a way in which each one of us, citizens, can, let's say, we can involve ourselves in problem solving. The kind of innovation that we like are, you know, topics, business models, new products, new services that are, of course, innovative, but also have a very clear, deep, profound, and positive human impact. I always use this example, and I suppose sooner than later is going to get anachronistic because, you know, technology moves very, very quickly. But quantum computing is great, but perhaps it's not something that normal people, like, I mean, myself, if I can consider myself normal, feel the impact in my life immediately. But there are other things, perhaps things that you have on your cell phone, you know, the apps that you use, certain business models that you can get access to, and you really feel how they impact positively your life. And those are the kind of things that we want to focus. And in that regard, we do different kinds of work, things that have to do with fintech technology, things that have to do with digitalization of public administrations, and several other topics. But one that caught our attention was that there are still a lot of people who smoke. Smoking is, depending, you know, who you ask, you could say, is either the first, still the first killer every year in the world, or among, you know, the podium for sure of reasons of disease and premature death. And we became, let's say, very excited that there are innovative alternatives that allow people to consume nicotine without all the problems that combustible cigarettes have. We do not have, by the way, Eric, we do not have a prohibitionist approach towards traditional cigarettes, but I think everybody today recognizes that they are not the best you can do for your health. And if there are ways in which adults can have let's say, more tools, you know, at their disposal to switch from combustible cigarettes to alternatives that are safer, we think that's, let's say, a good idea to explore.
I love that starting point. It has similarly infuriated me here that I'll step back in time for us about 10 years. So at that point, smoking was legal but heavily taxed, and the government was undertaking an awful lot of activities trying to discourage smoking, denormalize it, a lot of things that felt very punitive towards smokers. And they were claiming that it was all on a public health basis, that it was really important on those grounds. And meanwhile, they maintained that a whole pile of far less harmful ways of accessing nicotine should remain illegal. So vaping was just starting to come on stream elsewhere. It was banned in New Zealand. Snus has been banned in New Zealand forever. I remember when I was on faculty at Canterbury, I had written a column in the Christchurch Press on some of the harms of New Zealand's tobacco policies. And I had a letter from a New Zealand guy who'd been involved in this stuff for ages. And he's just pointing out, snus has been, like, this was before 2010. And he was talking about snus then and how it was illegal in New Zealand. For listeners that aren't familiar with it, snus is just a little oral tobacco pouch. It's been really important in Sweden in particular and getting smoking rates down there. And we maintained prohibitions on all of these things that were less bad than combusted tobacco, while saying that we had this really strong health approach. So this informed our 2016 report, Health of the State, and then our 2018 report, Smoke and Vapor. So what were the categories of products that you guys were looking across? And point us to some of the global leaders across these different categories so that we can compare our own policies here with, well, what seems to be most effective elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is a long question. The index, what we, let's say, try to do with the index is to measure and to have a metric to show who's harnessing better and or worse the power of innovation to try to deal with the problem of smoking and try to solve it. What we did in order to do that is to measure, let's say, the regulatory environment of four alternative and innovative nicotine products. These products are snus, vaping, heated tobacco, and nicotine pouches. By the way, both snus and nicotine pouches are a Swedish invention, which is quite interesting. And we wanted, let's say, to create, as I said, the most objective metric, and everything that we, let's say, everything that supports our index is available to the public. We are very happy for people to understand exactly what we are measuring, how we are measuring it. And we're also, and I always say this, we are also open to be criticized for someone to tell us maybe you could do this better, or there's something that you claim that is happening in the country that is not. You know, it's for us, this is a huge, you know, undertaking to do this, and we know that, let's say, we're very proud of our work, but we try to be as transparent as possible with the results. The index evaluated 69 countries with a combined population of a little bit over 5.5 billion inhabitants. That's basically 70% of humanity, a fact that makes us honestly very proud that we were able to measure so many people. And you know, the situation of what's going on in their countries. From those 69, and here I could be slightly arbitrary, but you could say that the ones who live in the first 20 countries, which is less than a billion, they live in countries that have quite reasonable and sound policies regarding using innovative nicotine products and allowing them. You have to think, Eric, that the person we have in mind every time we do a work in this sphere is the current smoker, basically. Yep. So it's somebody who either cannot, probably is thinking of quitting, but cannot, or maybe it cannot, you know, leave nicotine. So that's the kind of, we want to give tools to that person. So in the first 20 countries, if you are a smoker, it's probably the case that it's relatively easy for you to access alternative and innovative nicotine products. The rest of the countries, and again, maybe 20 is a little bit too arbitrary, but the rest of the countries from the 21st to the 69, the situation is complicated and can become extremely complicated. We can look at your neighbor Australia if you want, where things basically everything is forbidden there. But in general, let's say in the first 20 countries, you can have a good you can access nicotine alternative nicotine products relatively easy. In the rest is becoming more and more complicated. And the rest of the countries, it's a combined population of 4.5 billion. So it's really a large majority of people living countries where there's definitely room for improvement. We are optimistic. We think, and again, this doesn't come from a prohibitionist point of view. It comes from a point of view of liberating human potential by avoiding illnesses and premature death. And in that sense, we believe that we are going to defeat smoking earlier probably than many people expected. And innovation is going to be it's going to play a key role in this. But currently, particularly if you are a smoker, you face and you want to switch to alternative nicotine products, you face a very tough, you know, the probability is that you're going to be facing a very tough regulatory environment, that you'll have to rely on the black market and things like that. And or you're going to be bombarded by propaganda from your own authorities. And so it's a difficult environment in general. And it's funny that many people who particularly live in Europe or in countries that are doing relatively well, they have criticisms to their own frameworks, and we understand that. But sometimes this is a competition of the less bad, not of the best.
Just back on the comparison, New Zealand and Australia, New Zealand has had a more liberal approach towards vaping in particular, and heated tobacco products. Australia has been more restrictive. Now, eyeballing the smoking rates between the two countries, it looks like New Zealand has been far more successful in driving down smoking rates as compared to Australia. Your index seems like it could provide a foundation for later work looking at differences across countries over time in smoking rates, because we start getting differences. Well, there's now been two editions of the index, right? So we've got two measures on policies around alternatives to smoke tobacco. We've got regular data that comes out on smoking rates. Somebody could put that together and take a more comprehensive look to see how variation in policies around reduced harm alternatives affects rates of the most harmful way of accessing nicotine, right?
Indeed. And the other issue, and I mean, Australia is basically performing, I mean, not a miracle, you could say an anti-miracle, which is that they basically have not the smoking prevalence is not declining anymore. And according to some studies, it's even starting to pick up slowly, but which is really something but the other issue, and this is why we think innovation was like the missing piece in order to the country that, well, New Zealand exemplifies that to a certain extent, and probably in a more complete way, Sweden also does that. But let's say the so-called anti-tobacco measures, they are definitely effective to a certain extent, because I mean they are coercive measures, and coercion to a certain extent is, I'm not talking here from a moral point of view, I'm just, you know, it achieves certain goals, particularly at the beginning. But what you see also in many countries is that the traditional anti-tobacco measures take you to a certain point, and then there's a ceiling that either becomes impossible to move or is extremely difficult and slow to break, you know, and to continue going down. And on the other hand, you have countries like What New Zealand is doing with vaping, the UK is doing with vaping. Sweden, from a different point of view, more cultural than related to active public policy, but at least they have had a very liberal approach in public policy, let's say, not with the government actively recommending or subsidizing vaping, for instance, but with the government letting the industry work and letting innovation move forward. What you have is that in those countries, smoking rates are plummeting. Nicotine consumption is extremely interesting. In Sweden, it's slightly higher than the European Union average, but all the diseases related to smoking also plummeted. So it's not that the Swedes stopped consuming nicotine, it's just that they don't burn things in order to consume it. And with that, what you have is a major change in let's say in public health for the better. So that's why we really think that innovation and allow innovators to do what they do best, which is improving our lives,
now,
was the missing piece. The traditional measures have worked to a certain extent. Educating the population is okay regarding the risks of smoking, but there was that part missing. And Sweden shows that, New Zealand shows that, the US is showing that, UK and several countries.
Now, you're talking about coercive measures reaching sort of a plateau, that you could do as much as you can on that and you get kind of a steady state level of smoking afterwards. Maybe there's a little bit less youth uptake than there had been and older smokers dying off. So maybe that has a slight reduction over time, but otherwise you've plateaued on coercive measures. I've worried that where New Zealand has gotten to on vaping will get us to another plateau. The public health side seems to have split into two almost warring factions. There's one side that worries deeply that nicotine dependence is itself a harm, and they are very worried about long-term dependence on that, as well as potential things that we've got no reason to expect that there's going to be harms from vaping, but maybe some will be discovered. You've got the other side that worries a lot more about harms from smoking. And when I talk to folks on that side, they keep emphasizing the importance of people being able to find the route that works for them. So that can mean within vaping, the flavor that works for them. So if you've got a very restricted range, then maybe somebody just doesn't find the one that works for them, so they stick with smoking. If you've got a broader range, more people are able to make that shift. But if you already have a fairly liberal range, that will still wind up plateauing at a different level. There'll be some people for whom vaping just isn't really an attractive alternative compared to smoking, no matter how many flavors you've got. And that starts then making the case for opening up other ways of accessing nicotine to see if there are other less harmful ways of getting it that might work for other current smokers. So if we're always starting from the perspective of current smokers, just being in the top 20 to me doesn't really feel like it's enough, right? Because you will have done fine for all of those who have been able to make the switch within that set of policies. But if you're not continually improving them, you're leaving behind the smokers that you haven't reached yet.
Indeed, yeah. And those are, I mean, Eric, there's a lot of to unpack from what you were saying. And because, well, you know, a couple of things just coming back to the index and then, you know, to this issue of picking a winning product, so to speak. With the index, you mentioned, this is the second edition of the index. The first one was presented 2 years ago. And with the index, from the very first moment, what we were trying to do was to, you try to present, let's say, like the most accurate measurement, like you want to mirror reality in a way. You want that mirror to be as precise as possible. You know, it's not going to be exactly, because no index can capture the whole of reality of whatever phenomenon, but we try to do it. That's why from the first index to the second, most of the methodology remained the same. And hopefully now there won't be any more changes, but we made a few changes because you want to. And one of the things that for us, it's always, let's say, a difficult, you want to weight it in the most proper way is what you mentioned, because for us, let's say in the ideal scenario, there should not, the authorities should not be picking winners. The only criteria should be, hey, is this product safer or not? Is this product harmful or not? You know, but not saying, okay, we are, you know, vaping is the absolute solution and the non plus ultra. And not only that, the regulation regarding these products should be smart enough to be open to what could be coming in the future, because we don't know what can come. Again, these four products that we are measuring right now, again, they are not the non plus ultra. We don't know if something, you know, we hopefully something even better will come in the near future. But in any case, and this shows you know the real jungle that sometimes this regulatory environment is for many people in many countries. The situation of New Zealand is light years ahead compared to many other, I mean, your neighbors, my country, Argentina, many countries in Latin America, many countries in the Asia Pac region. So let's say we are always playing in that role to say, let's not let the absolute ideal should not be, of course, is where we would like to go, but it shouldn't become, you know, such a radical thing that it paints everything as if it were completely a disaster. But I fully agree with you, and we can also talk about, you know, how to do it more open later if you want.
So what was behind New Zealand's drop from 3rd to 11th? You could imagine that maybe you've added more countries to the index. One that wasn't in there before is now counted, so it wasn't that New Zealand dropped.
Some countries additions and some and slight changes in the methodology, and also we are also very, very clear in the methodology. The final score of a country in the global, we have, let's say, just to explain it the least boring way possible, we measure the four products, snus, heated tobacco, vaping, and nicotine pouches, and a combination of those four scores give you like the overall score, which is the let's say that's the main ranking for us. And then you have the rankings per product. That overall ranking comes from a weighted average. And the criteria, because again, and this is, you know, these are certain small arbitrary things. I mean, we are very explicit why we did it, and we have our reasons. But there are other ways that we could have done this. The weighted average has to do with we are following a publication called the Global State of Tobacco Harm Reduction. And we weighted the results according to the number of users of each product that there are worldwide.
Okay.
And roughly speaking, is this is not exactly, but it's a little bit over 70 for vaping, 70%, let's say, of the users of alternative nicotine products, a little bit over 70% use vaping. A little bit less than 20% use heated tobacco, and then it's five and five nicotine pouches and snus.
Oh, good. And so it's a methodological issue. It wasn't that there was a substantial change in policy. I'd seen some minor changes in policy, but I wasn't sure that it would have been enough to have really hit an index. You've explained that it's more of a methodological issue, and then going forward, it'll be more consistent. And I suppose that anybody doing research in it can just look at each of the subcomponents and set a consistent weighting so that they can do a time series on it. It's all good.
Exactly. So exactly. And we are, let's say, this was, but also that's why we also have the rankings per product, because that give you a very clear, and everything is stated, but yeah, the overall ranking comes with this. And also there were a couple of categories added from the last, you know, that were not in the... in the first index, and yeah, that in some countries that made it to the index that were not there, and yeah, that was the combination.
So,
but in any case, let's say in the region, New Zealand is the leader. There is no country. I mean, New Zealand is the only country in the top 25 of the Asia Pacific region. So, I mean, there's a really, New Zealand compared to the region is doing extremely well, And even worldwide is 11th. I mean, it's very close to the top 10.
That's great. And I'm hopeful that can wind up improving on it. So the coalition agreement for the incoming government, I think it was the coalition agreement between New Zealand First and the National Party, said that the government would start looking at snus as a potential addition to our policy mix, so long as they follow through with that appropriately and don't have too much backsliding on vaping. We might look forward to a better score next time.
Indeed. Yeah.
So just to ask on that, if they are looking at snus, which countries in particular should we be looking at? And are there any that we should be avoiding? We should be avoiding the ones that ban it like we do, but are there places that have done a better job or a worse job in regulating it?
Well, Japan, by the way, has done an amazing job regulating snus. But for us, probably the country that is doing it almost perfectly is Sweden. And it has to do with something you were mentioning, in the sense that not picking one product for, you know, as the winner, or deciding that just one product is the solution. Definitely, I mean, vaping definitely has helped. I really like, one of the things that also made us starting in this area is listening to ex-smokers who started vaping, people who smoked 60 cigarettes per day, that they did crazy things to buy cigarettes. Just let me tell you a story, because this is amazing. There's a gentleman in Argentina who smoked 60 cigarettes a day, and he was trying everything. He was trying even, like, you know, like, I don't know, hypnosis. He was trying things that even, I mean, are questionable, you could say. Nothing worked. Chewing gum, you know, with nicotine, patches with nicotine, nothing. One day, he even did this. He said, I'm going to go out without money to the streets, to outside, so I cannot buy. But he knew the guys, you know, at the shops, and he could get it without paying. They would come tomorrow and pay me. So that didn't work. So he even tried the following strategy. He said, I'm going to buy one pack of cigarettes, just smoke one cigarette and throw the rest of the pack. He bought 20 packs that day. So this is a true story.
Yeah.
That gentleman started vaping and never tried a cigarette again. And he says, I don't stink. In my house, they are not, you know, telling me all the time, hey, everything is full of the smoke cigarettes. He says, I can climb stairs now, which I couldn't. So, I mean, those stories are, from a human point of view, are things that, you know, they make you happy, really.
Yeah.
You see, this is the guy who was, you know, having lots of problems and now has solved thanks to this technology. But the issue, let's say, regarding how to regulate these products in general and the openness towards them, Sweden really is doing a very good job, the UK as well. But in what we always highlight about Sweden, and we've been doing some work about Sweden in particular, is that in Sweden, there are not that many. Sweden is one of them. In Sweden, the four alternative nicotine products are allowed. They have let's say, we like to talk about the three A's, these products, and again, thinking of smokers, you know, who want to switch. These products are accessible to them in the sense that they can be bought in different, you know, retail channels, including online. They are acceptable. And what does this mean? They come in different nicotine levels, and they come in flavors. So there are, let's say, incentives that, you know, allow you to switch. And again, the nicotine levels are extremely important, because if you're a heavy smoker and you get something with has very little nicotine, it's not going to work for you, and you'll come back to smoking. It's like that. And they are also affordable. in the sense that taxation reflects the level of, you know, risk or safety, as you want to think about it, of the different products compared to combustible cigarettes. They are not taxed the same, they are taxed lower. This, by the way, also allows to respect, let's say, certain gender sensitivities, because that is one of the problems of the one size fits all. Because in Sweden, it would be, let's say, it would have been a possible path for the government to say, let's say, 20 years ago, say, okay, we're going to defeat smoking with snus. And I mean, snus is 250 years old, is Swedish, is basically part of their culture. So let's say it wouldn't have been a crazy policy, but snus was never too much acceptable for women, for instance. I like to say in Sweden, snus is still king, but nicotine pouches are the queen. Women are stopping smoking thanks to nicotine pouches, and vaping is twice as popular, so to speak, with women than in men. So, well, the issue of flavors is more important for women than for men, and the issue of different levels of nicotine is more important for women than for men. So this tells you, and this also, by the way, comes from an Ipsos poll about this topic that I can happily share with you, and you can add it to the notes. So really, this tells you a lot of how you need to give alternatives to people to respect, let's say, their individuality.
Federico, this has been wonderful. It's an optimistic case. The upshot that I've taken from it is that New Zealand is doing really well. Let's not screw it up, and we've got opportunities to do even better. So this is excellent. Thank you so much for the optimistic and progressive vision of ways of solving the world's problems. And I'm sure we'll get a chance to chat again when the index comes out next time. It'll be another 2 years.
Hopefully not. Let's hope if we can do it next year. It's a lot of work, but let's see. But thank you, Eric. It's been a pleasure, and happy to talk to you whenever you want.
Thanks so much. And thank you, listeners. We'll see you next time.